Now, the question is, if you've ever had trouble with a shark in your toilet, or indeed found an armadillo under your pillow, you may well actually feel in need of the kind of advice that our next wondrous guest can actually provide for you, and will indeed be providing for the Creative Writing Den for 9 to 14-year-olds in conjunction with Writing East Midlands at the upcoming Newark Book Festival. Of course, we're talking about the amazingly talented Chris White. How are you, Chris?
Well, hello. Thanks for having me. Yeah, I'm good, thank you.
Excellent.
What a great build-up that was.
Oh, it's always right. Now, this thing, which takes place at Newark Library, in the meeting room, Beaumont Gardens, Balterton Gate, Newark-on-Trent, on Saturday the 13th of July, at 2:30pm through to 4:30pm. That's 7,200 seconds, 2 hours, in which some of the sort of challenging things that might just actually run through the imagination, like how can we possibly cope with somebody called Johnson in 10 Downing Street and so on, and other sort of issues with respect to that, let's not go political, they could actually be put into place. So share with us what's going to be happening at this Creative Writing Den.
Well, you know what, I don't even think I can tackle what's going on in Downing Street, so we're going to leave that alone, but anything else goes. It's strange with these sessions because you can't really plan too much because it's all based around being imaginative and getting creative. It's all very spur of the moment, so I kind of go in with, you know, kind of bare bones of what we're going to do and then kind of see what happens, just kind of run with it and go with the flow, and hopefully by the end we've all come up with something wonderful.
Well, it's given the strapline ridiculous rhymes and crazy cartoons, and I've got a particular fondness, as I've frequently said over the years, for Charles Dickens' line, The Pickwick Papers, Ode to an Expiring Frog. Oh, how shall I view thee lying there upon a log, oh dear, oh sweet expiring frog, which for me it's sort of set a quintessential moment, a high point in Victorian literature. Do you think we can match that in our second Elizabethan age?
I'm going to try. There's the challenge right there. I did once upon a time, I'm trying to remember, I did write a poem called Ode to a Dead Cat, which is a similar kind of thing. I remember a friend of mine, her cat sadly passed away and asked me to write something. I don't think she kind of realised what kind of poetry I wrote, and asked me to write a little eulogy for her dearly departed friend, and
I'm getting a sense, really, in many ways, of Moggy has lost his meow. Oh, wow, Moggy has lost his meow. Ow! Moggy has gone up to the skies where happy guys will... And so on and so forth. I was just sort of...
It was something like that. I'm just trying to remember now. Off the top of my head, there was something like, old Kitty is starting to harden, and soon he will lay in a hole at the end of the garden. Right. It was something along those lines.
Nice.
Never been asked to do one again, funnily enough.
Well, I don't know. I mean, you're getting rigor mortis there, which is good. You've managed to...
Ah, which reminds me of another one. So, yes, a rigor mortis in my tortoise was another one of my efforts from many years ago.
Clearly, this is a line where you know, we need to sort of raise this whole profile of odes to deceased animals.
Can I just say, is anybody thinking of coming along to the Writing Den? We will not be focusing on deceased pets.
Makes sense, really.
Yeah,
it could be too traumatic, actually, in all sorts of ways.
I mean,
what would you do if some teenager came along and said, "I've just lost my grasshopper," you know, I don't know what's going to go with that for you. You could refer them to Kung Fu episodes of the 1970s, but perhaps not. There are only people of a certain chronological aspect.
I don't know what you want to
Exactly, quite rightly so, too. So talk to us about your own background, Chris, in terms of why you kind of led into this creativity, because in many ways it is a case of free thinking and free association and so on. What led you to the whole notion of rhymes and cartoons?
Well, it's kind of, I always say it's kind of a hobby that got out of control, really. I've always, I used to get told off at school for, you know, not concentrating and doodling in the margins of my books when I should have been doing far more interesting things. Well, interesting, not really, but... So I've always done it, and it led to getting a series of horrendously dull jobs, just anything to pay the rent, because other people kind of were authors. It doesn't happen to you, does it? It's always kind of other people. And so I was in a string of really dull jobs, and not very... the last job I had before I got my first book published, I was working in a department store selling greetings cards, which, as you can imagine... it didn't really stimulate the brain. So I used to stand behind the counter and write these little poems and draw little doodles and things just to keep myself sane. Well, I should say keep myself sane. Keep myself insane, possibly, yeah. So over the years, just doing all these jobs, I was just doodling and writing just to make myself amused, just to keep myself from getting too bored. And then, lo and behold, one day I managed to get a book published, which was absolutely phenomenal. But it didn't change my life, you know. It sold a few copies, but I still kept going in the day jobs until I started getting asked to visit schools and libraries and book festivals like the one in Newark they were doing. And then it went up a whole other level because I just kept getting asked and asked. And it's kind of snowballed to here, really. Obviously, I mean, getting to the Newark Book Festival will be the pinnacle of career,
and another step as we actually concede and progress to Chris White Poet Laureate. I mean,
it's another rung on the ladder, isn't it?
Now, the Newark Book Festival has been growing in importance year in, year out. We've been following it through for the last few years now, and we're delighted to do so. Have you been there before? Is this a regular stint? I mean, will you be having a chance to check out some of the other things over the weekend? What are your views on Newark?
Well, I've been to Newark before to visit schools, but this is my first time at the festival, so I'm very excited to be there. Hopefully, I'll get a chance, yes, to see other people. That's the great thing about book festivals, is that you kind of just wander into other events happening, and sometimes people you've never heard of, and you sit there and listen to them, you think, my word, you're brilliant. So it's a chance to discover other authors as well. So, yeah, I'm really looking forward to being there.
It's like NAN, isn't it? Network at Newark. And we just want to work our way through that. You can use that. You know, Sarah Bullimore's listening. She can have that free of charge. Bless her.
She gets some T-shirts printed with that on that. So, yeah.
Exactly. And, I mean, because the other one you could actually use is a slightly negative Newark. East Midlands, not New Jersey, you know, just in case people actually get confused and sort of get on the planet trying to make the claim, because it's so easily done.
I can imagine, it's very similar.
It's exactly. Yeah. It's in the East Midlands, hence the reason the writing East Midlands are connected with that. Chris, how can people get in touch with your good self if they're listening to this and they just want to find out more Chris White material? Do you have a website? Is there a way in which people can access details?
I do. My website is, now bear with me this, is veggievampire.com. That all my information is on there. I feel like I need to explain it every time. VeggieVampire.com, because my first ever book was called Bitey the Veggie Vampire. It was a collection of poems, but the Veggie Vampire one was there. Because I thought, you know, I'm a vegetarian. If I ever get turned into a vampire, would I throw all my principles out the window and eat people?
Well, you say that, but technically vampires just suck blood. So, you know, from that sort of basis, you could actually say, you know, the rest of the meat is left to one side. So, you know,
we could talk all afternoon about it. Yeah.
And then you're into, do we go to fruitarian vampires? Do we talk about vegan vampires? I mean,
there are
a whole range of things. So it could open up a whole new scenario.
It's begging for a sequel. It really is. I need to update it. Yeah.
And it's worth.
Yes, veggievampire.com, is the place to.
We can go with that. And it's worth noting that, tragically, if you are 8 years old or 15 years old, you're barred. It's 9 to 14-year-olds only for this particular event.
But.
More or less.
There is an event before that.
Oh, well.
Yes.
Well, then.
At one till 2:15. Oh, don't get much of a break in between, do I?
No.
Never mind. Yeah, so I've got 15 minutes to grab a cup of tea.
Yes.
So 1 till 2:15, again in Newark Library, is an open session for all comers. For
well,
everyone.
There, you see, this is what call. This is, Chris, you're going above and beyond the call of duty. You know,
well, anything for Newark, you know that.
A 2-hour workshop for 9 to 14-year-olds, and before that, of course, at 1 o'clock, an open sort of session and a general discussion about life, the universe, and presumably vegetarian vampires might creep in there as well, I would have thought.
Possibly dead pets, who knows, sharks in toilets, anything goes.
Yeah, well, I mean, again, I can see a situation returning to where we came in, that actually negotiations between Downing Street and the White House and the States could be developed hugely by actually having sharks in their internal lavatories. It's just a thought.
Yeah. Ooh, yes.
Yeah, yeah.
Now I feel another poem coming on.
Well, there you have it. Chris, it has been awesome. Take care, and I'm sure we'll speak again very, very soon.
I do. Thanks for having me on. Thanks very much.
far will Anna Stone, a disillusioned police officer on the brink of leaving her job, go to uncover the truth about her sister's disappearance? Approached by Luke Carver, an ex-army drifter she's previously sent to prison, he claims to have information which will help her. Not my words, but the words of the awesome latest novel from the awesomely talented crime fiction and indeed Hull Noir soul, who will be at the Newark Book Festival, Nick Quantrill. How are you, Nick?
I'm very well, thank you. Thanks for having me on.
Excellent. A genuine delight as ever. And this new Hull crime thriller, we'll talk about obviously what you're doing in Newark in a few moments, but a city can't keep its secrets forever. Possibly based on Hull, or could it be Lincoln or Nottingham?
Well, I think that's the great thing about crime fiction is that it really resonates in real locations. So for me, you know, being somebody from Hull and living in Hull and working in Hull, I always wanted to write about my own city and explore it through that, but there's absolutely no reason why you can't write them type of stories in Lincoln and Newark and Nottingham and all those type of places as well.
Exactly. Now, clearly backed by much popular demand, you will be chairing a whole new panel of best-selling crime writers. Sarah Ward, of course, with A Patient Fury, The Shrouded Path, Abir Mukherjee, A Rising Man, Necessary Evil, and Tim Baker, Fever City, A City Without Stars, in this crime ceremony, fiction panel, Hull Noir, presents Crime Around the World on Saturday, July the 13th. Now, what, pray tell, will that awesome Justice League Avengers Assemble of crime writers actually be getting up to, and how will you control them, Nick?
Well, that is a question, because if anybody's seen these people talk before, you'll know that they're a lively bunch. So essentially, we're looking at how kind of location feeds into crime fiction, because the overall theme of the festival is home and away. So we've got a collection of writers. Sarah Ward writes about her own territory in Derbyshire. Abir writes about India in the 1920s, so he's kind of like neither home or away. And Tim writes about his latest crime novel is set on the Mexican border. So it's very much kind of how do writers go about deciding on location and then make it come to life in a really vivid manner. So is it better to write about your own place or a completely different place? That's kind of the question I'll be asking those authors.
That's very much at the heart of so much writing, not just crime fiction, but we're often told, or novelists and aspiring novelists are given the advice, well, write about what you know. And clearly, if you are particularly connected with a location, then you do know about that, so you can obviously give a bit more authenticity than if you're basically sort of writing a completely fictional work.
Yeah, I think that's a fair comment, and that's something we'll be talking about, because obviously I very much write about my own city, but yeah, I'm really fascinated about writers like Tim, who, you know, Tim's British, he lives in France, but say his latest novel's on the Mexican border, so, you know, where does that kind of drive come from to want to write about those particular places and issues? Because, you know, of course, the crimes in these type of places, they're all kind of relevant to the location, I think. You know, what happens on the Mexican border obviously wouldn't happen in Derbyshire or in Hull, say. So, you know, I think it's kind of an interesting debate to have that, really, that distinction between home and away.
Yeah, and not to be confused, of course, with the Australian soap with the same name, because it could be, I mean, people could turn up actually on the event itself and say, well, it was very fascinating, but I was expecting some Australians there.
Absolutely. I don't want any crime writers who have anything in Summer Bay, so we'll kind of manage what we've got.
Yeah, step away from there. You've got India, you've got Mexico, you've got Texas, Japan, Russia, France, West Germany. Even the Peak District would be talked about from that point of view, so well worth connected from that. Nick, how, since we last spoke, I mean, your career just seems to be going from strength to strength. Crime as a genre seems to be, again, becoming more and more popular. Not that it's ever really gone away, Harrogate Crime Festivals and so on. I mean, is it one of those genres which actually, you know, again, it's almost the gift that keeps on giving?
Yeah, I think it is. It is always popular. And I think it's kind of partly because it can be entertaining in its own right. You know, and partly, I think, as a reader, you can kind of get a little thrill of experiencing the dark side of life, but from the comfort of your own chair and your own home without really putting yourself into any sort of danger. So I think there's an element of that in it as well. But I think, you know, I think crime fiction as well is particularly good at telling us about society as it is now. So, you know, we can explore contemporary issues within the crime novel. And I think, you know, that's kind of a really engaging way of doing it. But I think at the heart, crime novels are page turners and it's entertainment and that's what people want. So I think that's kind of its popularity effectively.
It's particularly interested on your website about the writing process blog, in which you note that there's a game of tag going around on Twitter for writers who are passing from one to another a set of questions about their writing process. I mean, that's an interesting line in terms of how collaborative can you actually be? And indeed, have you, Nick, ever considered, yeah, I want to co-write this. I want to do what Terry Pratchett and his co-author in Good Omens, Neil Gaiman, actually did, and produce a sort of a joint crime novel.
Yeah, it is something that people are doing. Personally, it's not for me. I did co-write a short story with a friend for a magazine a few years ago, and we are still friends, which is a good thing. But it was such a strange process because it's such a personal thing that you do in your own space, in your own time, in your own way, I think. I find it kind of slightly odd, that concept of working with somebody else on a writing project. But there's kind of a bit of a surge of wife and husband teams who are doing it at the moment. So, I mean, Ambrose Parry is a particularly good example, which is the best-selling Scottish author, Christopher Bruckmeyer, his wife, who is a medical professional, and the novel is very much set in the 19th century in Edinburgh, but it's about medical procedures around abortion and things like that. So you've got that combination of a crime-writing brain who's been there and done it and the genuine medical knowledge alongside, and it works really well as a combination.
And are there any famous writers over the past, living and deceased, who you actually sort of said, I'd quite like to write another Hercule Poirot mystery. I'd quite like to do another Sherlock Holmes. I'd quite like to do another thing. Ever sort of felt you wanted to sort of branch out and actually deal with something that was created by another writer?
Yeah, that is a good question, because, I mean, these things are very popular, aren't they? Obviously, as I said, the Poirot ones and the Sherlock Holmes ones are constantly coming back. Mm. Well, a personal favourite of mine is Ted Lewis, who wrote the novel that became Get Carter, which we think, obviously, is the great gritty noir film set in Newcastle with Michael Caine in the lead role.
Much better than the one with Sylvester Stallone, obviously.
We're talking about that one,
no,
do we?
Quite rightly so,
It's... But I think as a character, Jack Carter is fascinating, and, although you assume he died at the end of the film, there's just like a little bit of a gap there where you just see him close his eye, but you're never quite 100% sure that he died. So I think there's a gap there where you could possibly write another Jack Carter novel there, but I suspect there are other writers ahead of me who'd want to do that.
Although there's always the prequel, what made Jack Carter the man he is. So always work on that sort of premise. If only to use the line, is there a Mr. Carter in the house?
Exactly. The actual novel is set around the Humber region, not in Newcastle. So, we want to take that story back to our area, really. So, I think that would be an interesting one to tackle.
Would indeed. Now, to go back to the New York Book Festival, the event, if you're looking to book tickets and go for that, I mean, a mere £5 for genius collaborative things, £4 if you're a friend of the festival, and it runs from 10 a.m. through to 11:15 a.m. On July the 13th, so well worth working through from that point of view. Would you get a chance to actually have a look at the rest of the delights that are around on the New York Book Festival?
Yeah, I will, because I'm actually coming back in the evening to interview Mark Billingham, who's the Saturday night headliner. Mm. Mark's obviously a powerhouse crime writer. He's one of the biggest talent in the country. He's a fantastic writer and a really nice guy, so he's well worth coming along if there's tickets left. I'll be hanging around for most of the day around the festival hall, just kind of seeing what's going on. I'm kind of a little bit sad that the Brian Clough panel is on the Sunday, because I'd really like to have seen that one when I was in town. I was a big football fan, so... But there'll be things that will grab my interest, I've no doubt.
Yeah, I would have thought being in Hull, though, we'd have thought, I mean, Brian's more Middlesbrough. I mean, up in a different part of the region entirely. Middlesbrough and Nottingham, probably, in Derby.
Absolutely, yeah. I think that's why he'd be a good fit with the festival, obviously, because his reputation goes alongside Nottingham Forest and Derby, doesn't it? So, not a million miles away from Newark, I think. So.
Although, he did score goals for Sunderland and Middlesbrough, so there we are. That's his line from that. And, of course, his son Nigel is still doing various other sort of bits and pieces in the whole field as well, from that point of view. Best not say anything about Hull City, but who knows, you might turn the corner again next season. I mean, I'm waiting in many ways, Nick, for you to actually produce a crime drama about somebody who wished to change the name of a very well-supported football team to Tigers. That we see how things can happen. I wouldn't say what would happen, but...
It is very tempting, but yeah. I believe these people are very, very, very lawyered up.
Just ease away from that whole process. That's important. Ease away. You can also obviously find out details about Nick on your own website, details which is, of course, nickquantrill.co.uk, and the usual Twitter and Facebook handles from that point of view. Hull Crime Fiction or Nick Quantrill for Twitter, when it will open up from that perspective onwards. Nick, it's been fantastic as ever. Who knows if, fingers crossed, I might actually try and get along to actually see the event and catch up with you at the festival myself. But, again, awesome. Take care and happy crime writing.
Thank you very much, Alex.
You actually got the Ruth Galloway mysteries to your credit as the creator. You might think, well, that's okay, I can rest on my laurels. But then when you actually have the Stevens and Mephisto novels as well, you just think, this is just getting even more wonderful. And when, of course, your much-loved crime writer and general all-round wonderful person, whose name is Ellie Griffith, then clearly it's a case of all good things are coming to the New York Book Festival. How are you, Ellie? Welcome back to the radio programme. How are you?
I'm very well, even better for hearing that lovely introduction. Thank you.
That's quite right. I do know that, as far as Lincoln's concerned, at least, that Jill and Sasha are always delighted when you actually sort of appear at Linden Books. So that's great stuff from that point of view.
Oh, me too. I mean, I have to say, so grateful to Jill and Sasha at Linden Books. They've been such a support to me always.
Yeah, and it's great. And I think you've also been working with one of our regular co-hosts from the Stone Tapes, actually, George Mann, who's been on panels and things with you. So
yes, we've become friends since appearing at Newark last year.
Yes,
yeah, George is great.
Yeah, exactly. So there we are. I mean, I'm sure that the time where you can actually have an Ellie Griffiths George Mann collaboration with Arding and Hobbs meeting Stevens and Mephisto would be wonderful. Or even Newbery and Hobbs. All various other things, I don't know.
That would be fun, actually, wouldn't it? That would be great fun.
It's worth considering, certainly. Now,
we're both great Blake 7 fans as well, so maybe we could do some sort of Blake 7 revival in honour of Paul Darrow or something.
Do you know, I think that would be absolutely spot on, yes. I mean, it was sadly sort of lost him this year, but yes, we definitely need Avon revive, a younger Avon.
Maybe
actually writing a prequel so we find out what made Avon the Avon we came to know and appreciate.
Now you're talking. That'd be great.
There you go.
I doubt I could do that, though.
it's a way forward. Now, moving on to this particular event at Newark, I gather you're on the children's fiction panel. Share with us, Ali, what you're going to be involved with as far as the Newark Book Festival 2019 is concerned, home and away.
Well, I'm really excited, actually, because I'm going to be on the children's panel talking about my children's book. So I've just written a new book for children. It's called Middle Grade, which sounds a funny thing, sort of for ages sort of 8 to 12, mm-hmm. and it's called A Girl Called Justice, and it's about it's a murder mystery really set in a boarding school in the 1930s. So it's a kind of locked room mystery for children, lots of clues, a haunted tower, all the things you'd want. So I'm really looking forward to it.
Well, it sounds as though it's already got franchise written all over it, so I think we could get all sorts of other bits and pieces put together from that point of view. Now, in terms of, since we last spoke, again, the wonderful proliferation and quality of your work continues. Ruth Galloway, very much still at the heart of your writing, would you say? I mean, can we look forward to more Galloway adventures in the near future?
Oh, you certainly can. In fact, I'm just taking a brief break to chat to you now, but I'm in the middle of writing Ruth Book 12, which is called The Lantern Men. So, yes, it's still carrying on. I always thought there would just be 10 books, but this is number 12, and I've got a few more in me. Ruth's got a few more things to do, I think.
Of course, absolutely. I mean, I'm just sort of fascinated by, if you go to elliegriffiths.co.uk, you can find out how you move from Domenica de Rosa to Ellie Griffiths, which is wonderful. It opens up so many magical things on that basis. It's just, you know, I won't give any spoilers away, apart from the line, and that's how I became Ellie Griffiths.
Yes, it's a story. It's a story of how I became Ellie Griffiths. And in fact, if you look on my Ellie Griffiths sort of Facebook page today, I'm sharing the first line of the first book I ever wrote, which is when I was 11. So I'm hoping that, you know, the event in Newark might inspire some new writers.
Yeah, which is actually very much at the heart of the whole thing. And I know the organisers and Sarah and company are very keen to develop that inspired package from that point of view. Next question, of course, Ellie, is who inspired you? I mean, were you inspired by the classical writers, the Christies, the Mickey Spillane, perhaps not Mickey Spillane, maybe the Sherlock Holmes, the Arthur Conan Doyles, etc. Who kind of triggered your creative juices as a child?
Do you know, I was a big Agatha, and still am a big Agatha Christie fan. I do remember when I was sort of a teenager reading through all of them. Later on, I became a huge fan of Wilkie Collins, and he's probably the biggest influence on me as an adult writer, I think. But do you know what? I was thinking about this, and I was thinking the first crime novel I read was probably Enid Blyton, the Willoughby Fair mystery.
Yeah.
And I think we don't really think of Enid Blyton as a crime writer, but kind of that's what she was, if you think of the famous Five and the Five Find Outers and Secret Seven, and this particular series, and the Willoughby Fair mystery, I think, is one of three about these children. And it's got a very, very good plot in the middle of it and a very scary scene involving stuffed animals. I won't say any more.
So I always felt that as far as the Famous Five was concerned, the various aspects of George was particularly interesting. Kind of pre-transgender days in many ways, really, I felt. But still, there we are.
Well, you know, she was a great character, wasn't she? And she was not, you know, constrained by the things that might have constrained girls in her day.
Exactly.
So, no, she was a great character. It's a pity that Anne always had to stay behind and sweep the cave or wherever they were staying.
But somebody had to look after Timmy, obviously. So, you know,
Timmy, yes.
Yeah, it's clearly for that part of you. And let's not get started on Uncle Quentin, because that could be a whole new sort of world
No, really not.
Yes,
no.
It's definitely. So what are you most looking forward to, Ellie, at this year's Newark Festival? I mean, will you get a chance to actually check out some of the other writers? I mean, the Joanne Harris, Alison Weir, Mark Billingham, of course, we're hearing will be around from that point. It was a case of, no, I'm focused completely on my own event, and that's it, in and out.
No, I will go, I'd love to go to as many events as I can. Big Joanne Harris fan, really like Mark Billingham's stuff. He's always fantastically entertaining as well, so I really want to go and hear him. And my event, I think, will be really good fun, because we're being interviewed by a fantastic young interviewer, Kezia Redoubt, who is just brilliant. So I think that's fantastic. I'm looking forward to being there with Thomas Taylor as well, who's a brilliant illustrator, so, and Michelle Harrison. So I think it'll be fun.
Of course it will be. Now, just to remind people where people can actually go to find out details about the Newark Book Festival. Obviously, you can go online and just type in Newark Book Festival. But when is your event actually taking place?
I'm actually on Sunday the 14th of July.
Mm-hmm.
And it's at Newark Town Hall. And it's the three of us. It's, say, Michelle Harrison, Thomas Taylor and me. And we'll be interviewed by Kezia, who is, I can't remember how old she is. She's brilliant, but she's a teenager and fantastic.
Well, at the end of the day, we can be chronologically gifted, we can be experientially enhanced. If you can work through the whole process, then it's what it's all about, really.
Absolutely, very well put.
It's been awesome as ever, Ellie. Fantastic sharing some thoughts with your good self. I'm sure it won't be too long before you join us in our Siren Studios before too long. I mean, we've been saying that for years. It's high time when you come over to Lincoln again. We'll cross over to the other part of the East Midlands, but I know we're supporting the Newark Book Festival in this particular instance. And we look forward to, I don't know, maybe putting you together with George Mann. That'd be quite an interesting combination again.
That would be fine. That would be really good fun. And thanks a lot for all your support.